Welcome to the Fixed Ops Roundtable podcast, featuring Ted Ings and his distinguished guests. Each week, you'll gain valuable insights to level up your game in retail automotive's fixed operations. This episode is brought to you by BG Products, partners beyond product. And now, here's Ted Ings.
Welcome back to the Fixed Ops Roundtable. The Germain Motor Company has been in business for more than 75 years, representing 20 iconic manufacturers and operating 19 dealerships throughout Ohio, Florida, Michigan, and Arizona. John Malashenko is the chief operating officer and has spent his entire career in automotive. Germain's mission is to attract, develop, and retain exceptional people to deliver an outstanding experience that creates loyalty beyond reason, one customer, one guest at a time, starting with their core values of gratitude, enthusiasm, respect, mastery, accountability, integrity. And now, John is also a great friend of the Fixed Ops Roundtable. John Malashenko, welcome back to the event.
Great to be back. Always good to see you, Ted.
John, I was looking back. You know, I think next year it's going to be 30 years ago that I met you in Cincinnati with Toyota. It's
crazy.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's been at least that long. It might be 35 years, you know, mid-90s and Half Car and Jerry Plummer.
That's right. And congratulations to you and the Germain organization, John, and all the success that you are having.
Thank you. No, it's been, you know, it's a journey, but every year we, you know, reflect on where we've come from and where we're at, you know, sort of as a reference point for what's next. I think it's important, you know, I'm pretty future focused. I don't, you know, spend a lot of time dwelling on the past, but it's important. We spent some time at the end of last year going back to 2011 and really looking at what we'd accomplished and how we got there and sort of reminding ourselves of what's important and who's important. And it was a good exercise. So yeah, no, it's, you know, it is a journey and it continues. And the longer we stay together, you know, the easier it is, you know, to do business. I've been fortunate. I've had, you know, no GM turnover. I've had no GM leave me since 2011. You know, the relationships and the trust and the sort of the ability to be candid with one another, right, without people getting their feelings hurt, is such a powerful, you know, tool. And it seems like each year, you know, it the business gets easier because we know each other, right? We know what each other, how each other operates, what we need from one another. And so, you know, it's easier to adapt to the changing landscape because of that.
Well, I actually want to ask you about that today, if I can. Your team, and starting with the culture that you've helped build there at Germain, there was an article written a few years ago about top signs your automotive dealership has exceptional culture. And there were 5 points in it. They were that people stay, people support each other's successes, winners want to come aboard, people smile, and sales are up. So I want to kind of just go through those with you if I can. Sure. Talk to me about what you just mentioned, people stay. Is there any magic about that, or does that come back to some certain core values that, you know, that you exemplify?
Well, I mean, to start with, culture is an, you know, often used term. You know, in our mission statement, the end game is loyalty. We call it loyalty beyond reason, right? And there's a saying that, you know, customer satisfaction is worthless, but customer loyalty is priceless. So, you know, we're looking for something deeper, right? We're looking for loyalty, but, you know, a customer's not going to love a company until the employees love it first. And that loyalty is driven by culture, you know, in my opinion. I think it's the most, it's a long-term play, but ultimately it's the most profitable and it's the right thing to do. So it's easy to get behind, but to answer your question, you have to be intentional about it. You know, we do track, you know, we track by department every month, right? Turnover. And we have very specific average tenure goals, right, that we're trying to achieve. I think we're at 5.5 years. The industry average is somewhere below 3. So, you know, we're moving in a direction, but, you know, we study where the turnover takes place, and why it takes place. Oftentimes it's in the first year. If people stay 2 years, you know, they typically stay. So, you know, there are critical periods. Onboarding becomes critical, right? Career path becomes critical. And I think you have to be, I think that you have to really know what you want, right? The better you understand your culture, I mean, we're not for everybody, right? What we want and what we expect and how we approach the business is sort of unique to us. And so we talk a lot about, do you know what you want? And, you know, do you know how to get it? And once you get it, do you know, and again, within our mission, it's to attract, develop, and retain. You know, it's one thing to attract it and bring good people into the organization, but, you know, retaining them is, in my mind, is all about continuous development, training, support, and again, being intentional about, you know, their career development is all part of, you know, driving culture.
John, I got to ask you, how many employees overall, approximately, does Jermaine have?
1,100.
Wow. And, you know, one of the points I mentioned is that, and I hear this all the time, winners want to come aboard. People want to come aboard and be a part of what you're right. doing there at Jermaine. Tell us a little bit about that and how you're able to, you know, make that happen.
Well, you know, nobody's invisible anymore, you know, in the world of social media and technology, right? You know, a good experience or a bad experience is, you know, more significant, right? Because everybody's going to know. And I don't think you can, and you can't fake it, right? So the good news is if you have a good culture, right? If you are a good place to work, people will know. There are lots of different ways to investigate. And quite honestly, the people that are looking have an advantage, right? They're able to study the companies and do deep research through a variety of different sources, right? So, being intentional about being a place that people want to work, right? Being sensitive. And again, there's generational shifts taking place, right? When you look at the new NADA survey that just came out, you know, looks at the different age groups and where the populations are and the turnover levels in millennials, right? In Gen Z and Gen Y and even the boomers that remain, right? So you have to be intentional about it. You have to study it. You have to ask questions, right? And you have to do it at every store and in every department, right? So we have a leadership training curriculum for all 80 plus of our department managers to try to help them and make them accountable for their cultures. Because culture is a reflection of the leader in all cases, 100% of the time. The leader gets to control who stays and goes. You get to control who comes into the organization. You get to control how they get paid. You get to control what their job is and how they spend their time, right? So, you know, those are all the factors that drive culture, the most important being who you bring into it. And every hire either strengthens or weakens a culture. I don't think there's any neutral impact, right? We talk about that. Every hire, is it strengthening your culture, weakening your culture, right? The goal is that everybody, it's not just about the work. It's about how you do the work.
You know, if I think back like 15, maybe 20 years ago, John, I don't remember these conversations, or at least not many of them, about culture, right? Yeah. In a dealership. What do you think, you know, triggered this? What made that happen? And, you know, you, of course, have been on the forefront of this at Jermaine.
You know, I'm nothing if not curious. I mean, I question everything around me, always have. Wasn't always real popular at corporate at Toyota. They sent me to the field because, you know, I asked too many questions. And so I think that's part of it, right? Haven't been in this role really since 2008 now, made a lot of mistakes. You know, I want to know why things work and why they don't, you know? So really the issue of culture evolved out of, you know, over the years, I mean, we were just like anybody else, sell a car today, right? That was, you know, that was the focus, right? Moving units, volume, gross, right? But I read, I did research, I talked to other people, right? And ultimately, we started to shift our focus to there's a book, it's called 4DX that the Covey Group put out years ago. It's a great book. Sort of changed the way we approach the business. And they have four tenets. One of them is to focus on the tasks and activities that drive performance, not on the outcomes, Forget about the scoreboard. Forget about how many cars you get out, right? Become fanatical about the things that drive performance, right? As opposed to the outcomes themselves. So that's what we did. We started to ask harder questions about what really matters, what really drives performance, right? And as you do that, you start to realize most of our problems, most of our performance problems led back to people in many cases, right? To cultural issues. Maybe it was the wrong person. Maybe they weren't getting the coaching and the support they needed, right? As we ask questions about why we had turnover and why people left the organization, you know, we just weren't intentional enough about culture. But if you study it, right, culture, nobody's going to argue that culture drives loyalty, right? You can't have a high degree of customer loyalty. And everybody talks about wanting customer loyalty, but that's a long-term play. I've been blessed to be here a long time, and you know, we've had time and I've never really wanted to be anywhere else. So, you know, I always took a long-term view of the decisions we made. So it gave us the freedom to sort of do things that didn't necessarily happen quickly, but over time, they're really powerful, and culture is one of those.
We've had a number of panels on the Fixed Ops Roundtable, John, with just technicians, talking to technicians about what they want, what drives them, what, you know, makes them want to work for a certain employer. And we've learned over the past year or two in doing this that, you know, and as you know, there's been a shortage of technicians in our industry. We found out it's not always the money. And what they point to is the culture. And like you just said, that culture starting at the top. And is this a place where I want to work?
Well, and I mean, I think that's the same with any position. We found that too, right? Everybody that works for us could go somewhere and make more money. There's always, you know, but if that's all you're working for, you're probably not the right person for us. And there are folks that, right, you know, they're just there to get paid. You know, they want to come in, they want to do their work, collect a check. You know, we're looking for something more than that. And most people do want to be a part of something. You know, they do want to be part of an organization that, you know, something bigger than themselves, right? And to be, you know, connected to other people. But, you know, not everybody does. So again, when I go back to the issue of knowing what you want and knowing what kind of people are going to strengthen your culture, right? You're looking for people that can, you know, that we have it in our core values. You know, we talk about respect and it says, yeah, treat your teammates and your customer. It's like family, right? So the idea of respect is not just about the customer. It's about, there's an expectation, right, when you come to work, that you're going to respect one another, right? And support one another and not do anything, right? So relationships are important. We make it a priority and we manage to it, right? If somebody doesn't want to be part of a team, if they're just a hardcore individualist, right? And that's not for them, it doesn't always work out.
You mentioned a little earlier about Jermaine's commitment to learning, and it's continuous learning. And you provide a place where you mentioned 1,100 or so associates can grow professionally as well as support their families. Greg Penske was on the show earlier this year. He talked about the human capital as being the most important capital at their organization. John, why is continuous learning and training so important today?
Well, I mean, when you think about it, you know, the education, right? When we stop learning, we stop growing. And so at some point, you know, an organization can get pretty good just by executing consistently, right? So you build your team, right? You define your processes and you have a high performance culture and accountability and you get consistent, right? You show up every day and you execute the process with every customer, right? So we got to that point, right, where we were consistent, right? We had good people, defined processes, you know, tracking, accountability, right? And we were pretty consistent, but we weren't getting any better. Well, how do you get people better? There's only one way, right? You don't just do the same thing over and over again every day for a long period of time. That's not getting you better. That's just ingraining what you already are. In some cases, that may not be as what you want. So quality, right? The quality of the work matters, and everybody deserves the opportunity to get better. We also discovered that the reason we had turnover was because everybody in the organization deserves continuing education to be trained. And when you talked about not everybody wants just money, right? What they want, it's amazing to me when people find out about Germain Academy and what we do and the onboarding and the continuing support for a new hire, many of which are non-automotive, right? Coming into the industry for the first time. It's the difference maker. It's why they come to work for us. And I think in a lot of cases, the goal is if we can stay close to them and provide training and career path and support through the first year, like I told you, we get them to year two and they stay. That first year is critical. That's when it's hardest, right? So we've beefed up, you know, our training and development, but it came out of trial and error. We realized that, you know, we were hiring good people. There was still too much turnover. Where was it? It was in the first year. We built the academy. We created a mandatory 2-day onboarding, right? And then we started to really focus on those new hires and make sure they were getting the support they needed. And it's awfully hard in store to do the volume and quality of training required to get 1,100 people better. You know, it's just not feasible. I thought it was for a long time. We tried to do it in store, but it required another, you know, level.
And talk to us about that Germain Academy. You've done some state of the art things. Anything you'd like to share with us today?
You know, I mean, it's, I think it becomes more and more important every year, right? Because how do you, you know, as the industry changes, right? As we go through COVID, right? As we go to an order-based selling system, right? As we got no ground stock and we're selling cars that aren't in inventory. These are different processes, right? Completely different processes. In many cases, new technologies, right? In order to adapt to these changes, you have to be able to train these new processes, right? Things were changing. The job changed, right? Our business changed. How the transaction was taking place, where it was taking place. These were, in many cases, you know, completely new. And so the skills had to be developed, right? They had to be trained and reinforced. We had to get people in a room and define, here's our new reality, right? We're no longer doing this, right? We need to do this. So that's the other thing about continuing education. I don't know how else you adapt to changes in the marketplace without a strong, you know, training component. And that means you need to be able to bring that training to bear. Sometimes you need to create and develop that training yourself. But we use technology just like you do to provide training, right? We do it remotely. Any of our dealerships, anywhere from Arizona to, you know, to Florida to Michigan, training centers in Columbus, Ohio, they can all tap in remotely. We can see them. They can see us. We can talk. They can ask questions. They can interact. So we're able to provide a quality training experience to, and we had to, right? We're a group geographically diverse. So being able to build the training center, hire a training director, invest in the technology, you know, every day virtually, you know, we're conducting training. And I personally believe that anytime you provide a high quality training experience to one of your associates, a couple of things happen. They walk out of it, I think, in some ways appreciative for the investment, right? Because not everybody does that. So if it's a high quality training experience, you know this better than anybody, right? Changes the way that people think about the company, increases the likelihood that they're going to stay. I'm going to give them skills that they can go back and apply and not only improve themselves, but improve the business, right? So, you know, there's a lot of good things that happens from a quality training experience, and they get to meet other people just like them, right? And I think some of the greatest value comes from hearing other people's perspectives on the same job and learning from one another, not just the instructor. So, you know, I've been really pleased with the benefits, and you know, it continues to be, like I said, more important than ever because it's our key mechanism for adapting and growing in the future.
Okay, let me segue, John, in the time we have left from what you just said, how everything changed and we had to look at everything a little bit differently. I want to segue that over to fixed operations because sure. You're right, the business has changed. And what happened in the last 2.5 years, the essential nature of passenger vehicles. John, how do you envision, how do you see the importance of fixed operations going into the future? Service, parts, body shop, everything associated there.
Every dollar we're spending on facilities right now are expanding fixed. I mean, it's, you know, when you look at, you know, the market right now and you look at, you know, the customer pay increases because people are staying in their cars longer because the cost of cars have gone up, the availability is limited, right? You've got interest rates on the rise, transaction prices on the rise. All that makes good sense, right? So, you know, we always say, I don't know that I have a store where I can get to all the business, right, that wants me to get to it, right? My goal is, my ultimate goal is to be able to say to anybody that calls, bring it in today, right? I mean, and we're, and from a capacity standpoint, that's challenging. So I think it starts with culture, right? If you're a destination, right? If you're a people you want to work, you've got to understand what it is that those service advisors. I mean, honestly, you know, the turnover with service advisors is as big a challenge as it is, you know, with techs. We're working hard to grow our own techs. We provide subsidies. We work with the Matrix Training Institute out of Cleveland, who does a nice job with technician training. So we're training for the first time all our technicians, not just OEM training, but, you know, we're assessing their skills, you know, electrical, right, drivetrain, you know, suspension, figuring out what they know and then trying to improve their skills. That's a way to improve capacity, right? They can come back and be more productive. And these are significant investments. But, you know, to your point, I don't think there's a single department, right, that is more important to our, the industry is going to change. You know, everybody's speculating about electrification. All these cars are coming to market. We don't know how the consumers are going to respond. A lot of the OEMs are trying to get right in this space. And that game is going to play out. But fixed ops, I mean, fixed ops, used cars, finance, I mean, that's, you know, that's the future for us. And we're making sure that we're doing everything we can, you know, to be a destination and to provide the, you know, the capacity. I mean, we're spending a lot of money on expanding our in the heavy equipment in Ford. The Sprinter business on the Mercedes side is huge with all the expediters, right? That Sprinter business has exploded. We're expanding that capacity, right? So, you know, you move to where the business is, but I've never been more committed to those teams in that department than I am now. So it's a big deal.
Last question, John. Here we are in mid-November. Thanksgiving is next week. You mentioned a lot of the changes, a lot of things that are happening right now. Shortage of inventories, interest rates on the rise. We got a lot of folks watching today, not just managers, but we got dealers, general managers. A lot of people where Germain has come up in the recent past and in the past. And you're a thought leader in the industry. What advice, John, would you have for our audience looking into 2023 and beyond? What would you say?
You know, I was asked that question at NADA on a panel, right, about the future. And I said, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, and nor does anybody else. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, speculating. Usually they're selling something and telling you they have the solution. But, you know, strategy is situational. I'm in, you know, selling cars in Dayton, Ohio, selling Fords in Dayton, Ohio is not like selling BMWs in Naples, Florida. Those markets and those demographics are going to need different things from me over time. So, you know, but I don't feel like I need to know what to do. I don't think I need to guess right. I just need to be able to move in the direction that the market decides it wants to go when it decides. So, you know, the market's going to tell me when it's ready for electric, for digital retailing, right? And it's not going to be the same thing in Dayton, Ohio, selling Fords than it is. So I have a very open, you know, we look at situations, right? And we make decisions and develop strategies for that. So, I mean, the one advice is, I think adaptability, right? The ability, is your culture adaptable? Are your leaders and your people open and willing to embrace change? You know, do they know how to move in directions? I mean, if you're too entrenched in the way you've been doing things for a long time, you know, that's problematic. I said to my GMs the other day, I said, if you've got a pay plan or a process that's 2 years old, it's not in alignment with this market. You should go back and look hard at it and ask whether or not it still makes sense or how you can change it or improve it, right, to align to the market. And so that's my, you know, I think adaptability, right? And we have a saying, open to everything, attached to nothing when it comes to getting better, right? We don't change for the sake of changing, but the world's changing, and you know, we're going to have to change with it. If you're not willing or able to do that, you know, it might not be a lot of fun.
John, fascinating discussion. Thank you so much.
Always good to see you, Ted. Appreciate it. And good luck to everybody out there.
John Malashenko, on behalf of the Fixed Ops Roundtable and the Fixed Ops community, Chief Operating Officer at Germain Motor Company. John, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure, Ted.